This episode is sponsored by The Bridge to Recovery, a nonprofit program on 115 acres near Bowling Green, Kentucky, a tranquil place where they've been changing lives for over 40 years. Their people improve their quality of life by acknowledging past emotional wounds and healing from all forms of trauma. The CEO, Paul Hamlin, has been a friend of mine for 20 years. Call him directly at 858-945-7848. That's 858-945-7848. Or you can learn more about The Bridge to Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting thebridgetorecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Coach Jilly, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. I'm Tom Gentry. As I sit here, we crossed the threshold of 250,000 cases of coronavirus in the United States. So although this social distancing, work from home stuff kind of got in the way of a few interviews early on as this situation has unfolded, I've found more people become available. So had kind of a flurry of interviews this week, and it was kind of capped off with this conversation with Jill Lang, or as she's known online, Coach Jilly. So she is a life coach who specializes in love, relationships, conscious living. You know, so many of us get lost in romantic relationships. And I say that because I've done it myself. So many times throughout the course of my life, I was in situations where I thought, well, you know, the things I wanted from life, I would go after, I would get, I would do after I had the relationship that I wanted. And, you know, what I've learned is at least for me, it just doesn't work that way. I need to be the person who I want to be, or I'm not going to be the best I can be in relationships. So I say all that because, you know, this is one of those things in life that I consider an obstacle to authenticity. It can be for us, romantic relationships. So I really enjoyed talking to Jilly. She's my people. I found her on Instagram a while back and just kind of, I don't know if it was a hashtag, what it was, but somehow I came across her profile and she has this really great presence on Instagram. She does a lot of stories. You know, she has quite a little following, and I can tell she's really, really good at what she does. And I can only imagine how much and how many people she helps. So here you go. Enjoy it, Coach Jilly.
I am doing fantastic. I do not have the coronavirus.
Are you sure about that?
I'm positive. I am positive. I'm not positive. And I'm just happy to be alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely turbulent times that we live in, right?
It is. It craziest thing I've ever experienced in my lifetime. And I'm probably only about halfway there. But yeah.
Yeah. The one of the things that's most difficult about it that is that there's so much uncertainty. I mean, we just don't
know.
Yeah,
and that drives people crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the very nature of it is, I mean, first of all, it's invisible.
Yeah.
You know, we can't see it. So it really brings up that feeling of powerlessness in people and uncertainty. Hence the people you know, buying up all the toilet paper that I have not seen a single roll of toilet paper in a grocery store for probably 3 weeks or longer. I can't, I mean, and what I've tried to do is, I mean, it's less and less all the time, but I've been just like going out every couple days. And, you know, if I'm in this neck of the woods, I'll stop at that Publix and, you know, move around a little bit, but yeah, no, I mean, there's no toilet paper.
There's still, huh? So I probably shouldn't tell you that I was at Costco last week and they had toilet paper. And, you know, their toilet paper at Costco is like this gargantuan.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's bigger than a small child. So,
yeah.
I'm happy to report that I have toilet paper and I'd be happy to share with you.
Well, thank you. Maybe you can mail me a roll. But you know, the thing is, I was talking to somebody about this morning, like if that's my biggest complaint that, you know, because what I have found is like baby wipes. So have a ton of those. I'm down to like three or four rolls of toilet paper, but I have enough baby wipes to last me until the fall. So like these are pretty high class problems to have, you know?
This is true. I was on a amazing spiritual retreat at the beginning of the year. I'm so glad I went. It was in Costa Rica, and I learned that Costa Rica has a very delicate ecosystem, and when it comes to depending on the resort or the place that you're staying, they would appreciate if you did not flush much paper, and so. As probably too many details, but they wanted you to wipe and throw your paper in the trash can and not in the toilet because the, I guess the sewage system and whatever is just very, very fragile. So after being there, I thought it just made me rethink the whole toilet paper thing. Like, do I need that much? Am I using too much? Is this wasteful? Is this efficient? Can I do this with less sheets? Like it just brought something into my business. And so I find it all very ironic that, you know, that we had a toilet paper shortage here in America.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my experience with encountering people from other countries, Europe, you know, they kind of see us as gluttons, you know, like the portion sizes of our meals are way bigger than anywhere else. I mean, everything is king size in America to them. And it just kind of, it's kind of true to form that, you know, people are hoarding toilet paper. I mean, it's like, it kind of baffles me why. And I think what's happened is that couple people hoarded, then people started taking pictures and posting it online. And the next thing you know, everybody's saying, well, shit, I better get toilet paper. And so,
yeah,
people are practically fighting over it. But I mean, I don't see any reason to panic over toilet paper aside from there's been this, problem we created ourselves very unnecessarily.
We're America, man. We over sensationalize most things. Most things are very, very hyper sensationalized. you know, my understanding is that a lot of our toilet paper comes from China and that there was just a delay, some sort of lapse in the delivery of it, and it created a shortage. And, you know, it's the classic law of supply and demand.
Yeah.
The supply went down, so the demand went up. And so here we are, crazy.
Yeah. I wonder if the prices are going to go up too.
You know, I never even thought about what I paid for it at Costco. I think I just figured, like, well, I normally would buy this big thing of it. You know, I buy it probably once a year in my house.
Yeah.
For me and my daughter and myself, like, it's not like we need a lot of toilet paper, but.
Right. Yeah. Well, this line of conversation just kind of speaks to how unavoidable all of this is right now, because this has nothing to do with why I wanted to talk to you, but it's just the reality of the world that we live in right now. It's just, it's hard. It is. Now, I mean, it's not starvation. You know, it's not the same as poverty or anything like that, but it's definitely uncomfortable. It's been really disruptive to everyone, you know?
Yeah. It's the uncertainty. And I think you and I started talking about this earlier, and there's something about the uncertainty that brings up the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All of the stuff.
Yes.
And people are like, well, what do you mean the stuff? And I'm like, all the stuff that you were so busy and so distracted and so medicated or numbed out that you didn't have the time, the energy, or the space to look at or to feel or to deal with. And it's like, when you start taking away people's power and their ability to choose, or, you know, it's like, yeah, you're taking away people's control. It brings up the stuff.
Well, and to me, the silver lining of all this, I think, who knows what will come of all this, but one of the things I've thought about is it's forcing us to face ourselves. You know,
absolutely,
especially on an emotional level, as a culture, we're so avoidant. There's so many distractions that we have for ourselves. And, you know, when you're stuck in your house by yourself or with your kids or whatever the context, you know, and you don't have that routine to get lost in anymore. I mean, it makes you kind of look in the mirror, and it's hard to get lost. You know,
I would love to be a fly on the wall in homes across America. I would love to have like a hidden camera and see what's really happening. You know, for some people, it's more togetherness than they've ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's more aloneness than they've ever experienced. But whatever it is, every last one of us is going through something that we have never experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a nation, not in this world.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, the work part of it isn't as big of an adjustment. And I think you being a coach, it's probably very similar in that. I mean, I have face-to-face appointments and I have meetings that I have to go to, but I work from home. I mean, I worked from home before. So that part,
that part in and of itself drives people crazy.
It does. It does. Like, I mean, and that's when I talk to people about that, well, before any of this, just the idea of having a home office, working from home, a lot of times what people will say is, oh, I don't know if I could do it. And I mean, I've basically been doing it since 2010 at this point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know that I'd really want to have it any other way. I mean, I think hopefully it'll open people's eyes a little bit that, you know, there are creative ways that we can live that we don't have to be stuck in a 40-hour week grind. You know, we can figure out different ways to live that avail us of the company of our families. And, you know, that because as a culture, we sacrifice so much for work. I think, you know,
we do.
And it's like a badge of honor for us as a culture that, you know, we have that American get up and go, that work ethic. And, you know, I mean, I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Indiana, and that's kind of like a whole other level of work ethic there. Like, I kid around with some of my fellow, former Midwesterners here in South Florida about, you know, are you going to go to the funeral? I don't know. I might have to work. I mean, the way work is prioritized in the Midwest, I mean, you do not miss a day of work. You don't take, and it's funny because I read a post on Facebook a few weeks ago. My hometown has a group of people who, you know, write about whatever. And it was this guy who was writing about how, he had a summer job during college and he was staying with his mom and dad. And it was the same place where his dad worked. There are a lot of factories there. And, you know, his dad was working the day shift. He was working the evening shift, and his dad came home one day and found him laying on a chaise lounge out by the pool and like shamed him and, you know, made him go work somewhere else. And like, and he was like, you know, my dad taught me this lesson. And in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, I used to think that way. And now I think, you know, it's not the end of the world if I take a mental health day and like enjoy my life a little bit. Like, why shouldn't I also be able to enjoy my life? Like, I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Yeah.
So anyway,
but most people's identity is wrapped up in the work that they do. And, you know, in a major way, they don't know how to separate one from the other. And it gives them a sense of, you know, identity or significance or
whatever. And then when they lose a job, then they have the existential crisis. Who am I?
It's true.
Which is, you know, I mean, that was one of the, a lesson I learned from a spiritual advisor many years ago. I am not my job. I am not my job. So Jilly, tell everybody what it is that you do.
Well, aside from a worldwide pandemic, I'm a love, life, and relationship coach. I work on, I'm online based. So even though I'm physically sitting in Charlotte, North Carolina today, I can do my work from anywhere. And I've had clients all over the world, which is so awesome. I love the internet. When I say life, love, and relationships, I got my training through the Hendrix Institute and the Hendrix, Gay and Katie Hendrix. So if you ever read any of their books, they are the conscious loving people. And they've been together and married for 40 years, and they are desperately in love with one another. And after my divorce, when I really went back to considering coaching again, I had been on a certification path before that. I found their work. And so coming off of the divorce and meeting these people who were like in love, I was like, what? No way.
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, you know, I was jaded and hurt and bitter and all the things, and I was doing the work to heal, but Anyway, that's kind of how I ended up throwing the relationship piece in there. And so am I a life coach? Yes. Love. I believe in love, and I coach people, first and foremost, how to know themselves, trust themselves, and love themselves. Because without being on some sort of journey there, you're going to be a toxic force in your relationship. So relationship coach, do I work with couples? Yeah, I do work with couples, but I really do work with women first. Why? Because I am a woman. It's not to say I don't have men coaches. I had somebody DM me the other day on Instagram and say, like, why just women? And I'm like, well, it's not just women, but it is primarily women. And it's because I am a woman and I can speak to all that includes. So what do? I'm a life coach. I teach people how to clear out the old and make room for the new stuff they want in their lives. I help people overcome limiting beliefs and just kind of write new stories for their life. And I love what I do. Absolutely. It just lights me up. I love what I do.
So
did I answer the question?
Yeah. So you were a life coach prior to your divorce though?
I was in training. I was actually in training with CTI. CTI is one of the longest, the oldest. There you go. That's the word I was looking for. The oldest, most reputable certifying schools for life coaches. CTI is the Coaches Institute. They have a great reputation. They do great work. And I was on a certification path with them. And I had gotten through two, I think, of the five or six modules, I don't remember now, when my whole life blew up. And I was like, what? Coaching? What? Going to school, being certified in something? Like, I don't even know who I am. Like, what is my life? I'm not qualified to tell anybody anything about anything. And so I quit at that time. And then I eventually got divorced. And on my journey out of, you know, the mess that I had made of my life at the time, I had several friends say to me, like, what are you doing? I was cleaning houses. I'm cleaning houses and apartments. And that was how I was making money. And they're like, what are you doing? You're hiding. You're not even like, you're a coach. I had so many people come to me and just speak into my life. They're like, you should be coaching. This is who you are. This is what you're about. You know, and so after, you know, having a few people say to me, you're hiding out, I realized they were right. And that's when I went and sought out a new, going back to CTI at the time just didn't resonate with me. I always tell people, like, people reach out to me all the time. They go, like, how did you become a coach? Or how did you decide, you know, what training program to go into? And I said, you just got to find something that resonates with you. It has to just, yeah, you can't just pick something to pick something. It has to be either a, you know, a modality or a methodology or a framework or a just something that just speaks to you on a soul level. And then you know that you'll be able to go forward and use that work to help people, you know, in a powerful and effective way. So there's tons of great certification programs out there. I'm not here to tell you how to do the one that I did. I can just tell you the one that I did changed my life for the better. And it helps me to teach people how to live better lives too.
Well, you know, I have some training as a recovery coach. I'm an addictions counselor, and, you know, that has become a more prevalent discipline in my world over the last 10 or 15 years coaching. So I'm, you know, familiar with coaching concepts and, you know, I'd heard about CTI. But, you know, I went through a divorce in 2013 and had a very good friend who, old high school friend who I had reconnected with online, who, come to find out after a couple conversations, was married to an active alcoholic. And here I am years later, an addictions counselor. So we started talking, and she ended up getting a divorce, and she has kids, and I have a son. So we both had custodial issues. And, you know, I mean, if you haven't been through that, I mean, I understand why you were cleaning houses, because, and I do, because it's like we go back out into the world coming from that dark place, like just lost and hurt. Yeah. And what am I even capable of? Is my life over? What are my options? Like, it just, it's so daunting. So just being able to empathize with someone who is going through that a couple years after I did. I mean, so we ended up having a lot of conversations, and at one point she said to me, you know, you're kind of like my divorce coach. And,
you're like, yeah, I kind of am.
And a couple days later, she sent me a link to a New York Times article from 2010 or 2011. There is a discipline. Mm-hmm. A divorce coach, discipline. And it's a husband and wife who live in the Tampa area. And they, I'm going to actually, I've talked to them about being on the podcast, but they were life coaches, and, somehow created this curriculum that, you know, you go through this certification process. You also, it is the life coach training. And additionally, specific work around the process of divorce and walking someone through that. And it's, I looked into doing that, and I started to actually do the training. And, you know, I had some other stuff going on professionally that I just realized that wasn't what I wanted. And I didn't have the time, or, I just didn't want to invest in that. So, but I do appreciate the opportunity to share my experience with people. And I think I am probably like you in that, you know, it hit me maybe 9 months ago. I never, ever thought I would say such a thing, but it just hit me, you know, I'm kind of glad I got divorced. Kind of not, and no, of course I'm glad I'm not with that person anymore, but I mean, divorce is the one thing I promised myself I would never do. I would take a kid through that. I would never, ever, ever do that. And so it was such a huge disappointment to go through that. But a few years later, looking back, I would not be who I am had I not been brought to my knees through that process. And, you know, I mean, it led me to do all sorts of work on myself. That in the very beginning of it was like, you know, a relationship inventory. You know, like a mentor of mine, you know, suggested to me, well, you know, you should probably take a really close look at the people who you have chosen to be in intimate relationships with, and look at what some of the common characteristics are. And it was, I mean, I don't know why all the work I've done on myself over the years, I don't know why I never bothered to look at that, but it was clear as a bell who I chose, you know? And I chose them over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And by the way, that didn't stop just because I learned that.
Oh.
I mean, I still had to work through the wounds.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, awareness is only the first step in the transformational process.
Right.
Step one, like changing in the moment, which takes practice and practice and practice and practice. I don't think that's till step two or three.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, what I really learned eventually was that what I thought was love was more of like a trauma bond kind of thing.
Oh, yes.
And it took me that intensity, that overwhelming sort of intensity that comes with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not, you just, to me, like I had to go through what I had to go through to get to that point, you know? I mean, I had to be, I had to be hurt and hurt and hurt and hurt. And it culminated in one last sort of situation with this person who I was, you know, felt this deep connection to, who was essentially unavailable to me. And, you know, I kept walking away and going back when she apologized, and, you know, I kept doing it over and over again. And finally, the last time I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go back, but I'm going to do it with a therapist, and I'm going to walk through all of it with a therapist.
Yeah.
And I did, and, you know, it took going through that from the beginning to the end of the relationship to watching what happened with her going forward. And I mean, it, and then to the point where, like, it's amazing that now, like, those people who I like would have felt this deep attraction to before, like, I'm just like, yeah, no, I don't want any part of that. And it's not, it's completely natural. But I think for me, what I attribute it to is that I took the time and was patient enough with myself to actually go through all the pain that I had been avoiding for my entire life.
Yeah. And
once I did that, it was, I'm good. Like, and you know, there wasn't like one day like, oh, I'm done now. I'm, you know, it just hit me like I'm not attracted to these people anymore like I was before. And now people who don't honor me the way that I honor them, I'm not the least bit interested. I'm not trying to convince them to be for me what they're, you know, I'm just not doing that stuff anymore. So,
yeah, it's funny because I posted something today, and this has been, I love that you shared that with me, first of all, and bravo to you for being a man willing to do the work. I think that, it's just much needed. You know, our men have been raised to be turned off to their feelings and, you know, and have been taught that it's weakness. But what it really is really, it takes courage. It takes a great deal of bravery and courage to sit with your feelings and sit with yourself and then be willing to do the work. Because, you know, when you get divorced, I've learned, by experience and by watching other people's experiences and then having my own, it's like there's a fork in the road. You know, your relationship's ending and you've walked away from that, or you're, you know, that's part of your past, but you stand at a fork in the road, and one direction is the work and the other direction is Bumble or the bar, you know? That's an exaggeration, but you know, I know people who split up and they immediately start online dating because they can't stand the thought of being alone. And, you know, or they drink or they party or they go out or they sleep around or they, Medicaid, or they just, you know, make declarations that I'll never fall in love again, and I'm just going to be alone for the rest of my life. And they, you know, and they just sit and allow themselves to stew in their bitterness. And that's one direction. And the other direction is the work. And I can't speak for you, but I'll speak for myself, and I can tell you it's absolutely worth it. It's absolutely worth it. I can honestly say, like, I'm so glad I got divorced. The same as you. It's, you know, if you had asked me that 4 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, this is terrible. You know, you might as well just rip my organs out of my body and run me over the car in the middle of the street. It's like, I don't know if I've ever felt pain like this before. But it is, I think if you ask my ex-husband, he would be like, you know, yeah, this was what was best for me. And I can tell you that this is what was best for me. I think that, you know, the partner he's with now is perfect for him. And I, you know, have nothing but love and light to send over in that direction. And thankfully, my kids are older, so we don't really have to do a lot of co-parenting. We can kind of just stay out of each other's hair, and that's worked out well in the long run. That's been what's best for us too. And but just like you said, just to mirror everything you said, like, I wouldn't be who I am today. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be doing the work that I'm doing. I wouldn't have the wisdom that I have in my little toolbox, you know, to pull out stuff and be like, well, this is, you know, this was my experience, and these are the tools that I use to heal, and this is what I found was most effective. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that you shared that you were possibly going to go in the direction of a divorce coach, because when I did first start coaching, or when I first started getting online and taking my very first coaching program was for infidelity recovery. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create a program that would help women heal after betrayal, because there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. That was my personal experience. And, you know, and I found ways to heal, but I feel like I did all the legwork so that I could put something together and offer it to women and who were having that experience. But, you know, after a couple of years, I found that it just didn't resonate with me anymore. I didn't want to keep telling the story. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to keep living in the story. And I kind of feel like when you said, like, oh, I was going to become a divorce coach, but then it just didn't, what did you say? You said it just didn't feel right, or if it wasn't for me.
Well, you know, if I was really invested in that and I wanted to do it, I would have done it. That's what it boils down to. At the time, I had a consulting opportunity that came up, and I left the full-time job to do that. And I thought, well, I'll do this divorce coach training thing, and that'll be my backup plan. And it became mm-hmm. pretty apparent, like, I need to give my full attention to this consulting job and let go of this backup plan thing. Everything's going to be okay. And also, like, I probably like the same as you with your infidelity thing. Because I didn't, you know, I mean, I can appreciate the opportunity to walk through that with someone, but I don't mm-hmm. want to make my life about that. And I have felt the same way before. You know, I'm a person in long-term recovery, got sober when I was 23 years old. And I am an addictions counselor and have spent most of my career working in that world, but I've also not wanted to relegate my life to just that. You know, that's this podcast. I mean, it applies, the concepts apply to addiction and recovery, but there are things that anyone can benefit from, you know, and I don't want to keep, I want to go a few levels up and look at the bigger problem. Like, why are we all numbing ourselves in the first place?
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's the kind of stuff that I want to talk about. And this, the whole idea of personal authenticity, you know, we know that it relates to the emotional, our emotional lives. Like, when we're numbing ourselves from our feelings, we're kind of being fake. You know, we're not being real. And, and I have learned personally, and I've seen that the more true to oneself a person is, the more successful they are, the more accepted they are, the more they love themselves, the more they are loved. And, you know, self-love, you mentioned before, and that's really what all this is about, like this relationship stuff. If we can't love ourselves, then we're not going to expect what we deserve from the people around us.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And, you know, another thing I want to kind of respond to that you mentioned, and thank you for what you said about like me being a guy and being willing to do the work and all that stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that it's noteworthy enough for you to say that. That's what bothers me about it. And a big part of what my life mission has become, and I interviewed someone else, a guy, a buddy of mine, for the podcast earlier today, and we talked about this very same thing that you said, that doing that work and actually facing ourselves on an emotional level and dealing with our pain and distress and discomfort, it takes courage. Mm-hmm. It does. There is nothing courageous about pretending we're not feeling.
Yeah.
There's not. Yet we're taught to numb ourselves, especially as men in this culture. And I just think it's all a big crock of shit. And yeah. I'm over it. And you know, so that's a big part of what I'm working on, just, and part of it is because, you know, I grew up watching, I experienced a lot of suicide, especially in my late adolescence and early adulthood. And it hit me years later that sometimes there were some drugs involved, and, you know, there was a lot of times there was a loss of a girl or some big disappointment, or, you know, there are all sorts of rationale. But the bottom line is they were all guys, and none of them knew how to talk about what was going on with them. And it pisses me off. It does. It does. That's, you know, so many men suffer in silence. And so, you know, one of my goals is to build an army of guys who say things like, you know, it takes courage to talk about your feelings, 'cause it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it does. It's just where, you know, you guys are taught that, not having feelings is what makes you strong. And it's actually quite the opposite.
Yeah.
It's quite the opposite. So I really hope that the paradigm, I think in a lot of ways, the paradigm is beginning to shift. You know, there are men such as yourself and others I can think of that are, you know, starting just to talk about this stuff out loud and how important it is. But we need the women on board too. You know, there's tons of women out there who are like, oh, just man up, or, you know, quit being a baby, or, you know, and we're part of the problem. We're part of the problem. If you're not a woman that can encourage and celebrate a man showing his vulnerability, then poo-poo on that.
Well, it's not a simple thing at all. Mm-mm. And it's really, it's not as simple as, as vulnerability and being able to show vulnerability, because and a lot of my story with the end of my marriage and my divorce, I started to learn how I wasn't showing up as a man.
Yeah.
Now, I could always talk about my feelings. I could do all that stuff. Part of that is I grew up with five older sisters. So, you know, I do well with both genders, you know, but, yeah, so I've always been on the more sensitive side, which I fucking hate that word, to be honest with you. It's so loaded.
I know. I was just going to say, it's used as such a weapon.
It is. but what I, here's an example of what I learned. Where are we going to go to dinner tonight? You know, that's an interesting, you know, scenario for couples to see how a couple is going to function. And my typical answer was, you know, whatever makes you happy. Okay, well, that's one way to do it, but you know, what are you going to do, Tom? Are you going to pretend like you don't want something and try to act like some kind of freaking hero because I'm Mr. Nice Guy. I'm just going to let you have whatever you want and then kind of secretly be resentful. And then there's this undertone of she's resentful toward me because I don't have the balls to say what I actually, you know what I mean? There were all these underlying dynamics that I didn't get. And we went through a succession of different therapists. And finally, the one that really helped me was the one who helped me see what I was doing, how I was being indirect. You know, a man is supposed to not be passive. A man is supposed to be assertive, active. And, you know, I mean, I was being weak. The energy I was bringing to the relationship was weak.
Yeah. Well, because then she didn't feel safe. Because actually women, you know, women who function in their feminine energy, you know, they want to feel like the masculine is there to support them.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times a woman will challenge a man because she wants to know, can she trust him?
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and, you know, until I worked through all that, I couldn't like a concept like that, like, you know, and later on in my dating life after that, I, you know, I realize that's true. Like sometimes I'm in a scenario with someone and I go to them and say, listen, this isn't working for me. I'm not going to do this if this is how you're going to be. And you know what? Everything changes and everything's better because I had the guts to stand up for myself and speak my truth. And she felt safe. So, where the old me would have just like, I don't know, begged for attention, pretended like none of that was going on, felt sorry for myself, any number of
times. You would have done the typical protest behavior, right? Just whatever kids do, either cause a scuffle to get some attention or, you know, do something dumb or.
But not deal with it. Saying,
rather than just speak up and just say, hey,
right,
I need you to do this or I'm feeling this kind of way or let's go here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
well, so much more effective. So I learned then that, and in reading that I've done over the years, even before and after that, that a lot of women, you know, even women who say they want a quote unquote sensitive man, they really don't. I mean, maybe in some ways they want someone who's not a meathead. but they don't, you know, they want a man who's going to show up.
Yeah.
You know, And there's a difference. There's a difference.
There is a difference. Mm-hmm. Well, I've learned that you really can't, you know, the greatest gauge, I think, in relationships is, you know, how's this person showing up for themselves? Mm-hmm. It's just, that's the litmus test. You'd say like, oh, I want someone sensitive, or like, or someone who's in touch with their emotions. And you just hang out for a few minutes, so people will tell on themselves real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, there are ways to clue into someone's level of vulnerability, or, you know, how they communicate. You know, are they sitting in a victim role, or are they able to assert themselves or say what they need or speak up, you know, speak their own truth or whatever, and, you know, in a way that it's, well, I am a relationship coach. I can kind of sniff that stuff out, but you just can't be expecting from other people what you're not giving to yourself or doing for yourself. Mm. So if you want honesty in a relationship, you've got to practice being honest with yourself first, and then with the people who are in your life, who are close to you in your life. You have to be able, that has to be a practice. You can't say like, oh, why can't people be honest with me, when you don't practice that in your own life? You're not honest with yourself.
Can't even
about your
say
own
what
feelings.
Restaurant you want to go to. Can't even say what kind of food you'd like to eat.
It's so true. It's so true. Like, that is so like, ugh.
Yeah.
You want honesty? Then just say, I want sushi,
right,
or tacos. I want tacos.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, proverbially apply those to the bedroom, you know? What do you want?
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that's another place where people like really are afraid to be real about what they want.
It's an exact reflection of what's going on inside of you. Because if you are, I'll speak for women, right? Mm-hmm. If you hate yourself, if you don't think you're attractive, if you don't think you're smart, if you body shame yourself, that is going to show up in the bedroom. It's going to show up in your relationship. Yeah. Like, that's why it's so important. You've got to do the work, the personal work. If you want something different, you're just.
Well, and for me, until I was ready to like really start digging in and doing some work, how do you even know what you want until you work through all that stuff, you know?
Exactly.
And you don't. You think you want something that's going to, actually, it's just something you think is going to make you feel better, you know?
Exactly.
But it's not. And so, you know, over the years, the more I've been willing to work on myself, the cumulative effect of all that has become, I know who I am more, know what I want more, have more confidence and more comfortable with myself. And all of a sudden, like, I'm a different human being, you know? Not sudden, but it seems like that sometimes. Like, wow, well, who am I this? Where'd this confident guy come from? You know, I never used to be like that.
You know where it came from? It came from getting clear.
Yeah.
You got clear on what you want. Mm-hmm. What you're worthy of, what you deserve, what works for you, what doesn't work for you. You got clear on what you wanted to have for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how emblematic some little things like that can be?
Yeah. Yeah. I tell my clients all the time, what do you want? Like, I'll ask, like, what do you want? Oh, I just want to find a great relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds, how very charming of you to say that. And that's what we all want. Yeah. No, I need you to get clear, right, like crystal clear.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, I mean, and it's kind of hard to put that stuff out into the universe if you don't feel good enough about yourself, if you don't feel deserving of it, you know?
Don't I know?
Yeah. So
I think it's funny because you said earlier how like you just kept attracting the same thing. And that's what happened. if you don't do the work on some level, you will keep getting a version of what you've gotten over the years. It will just keep showing up in different packages.
Yeah. Well, and for me, what I've learned, because I've done a ton of work for many years of, you know, I've worked on, and thank God, like, this stuff fascinates me. So it has made it easier for me to, like, work on myself, and because I'm intrigued. Yeah. But now the real change when it came to that kind of stuff didn't really take place until I felt everything.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I did all kinds of other work, but I still kept choosing different variations of the same woman.
All right. So what I heard you say just now is that that didn't change for you until you started feeling everything.
Right.
Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So say more about that.
Well, I mean, when I say that, I don't mean like here and now feel everything. I mean, like, because I'll speak for myself, went through life, neglecting myself emotionally, denying certain needs, denying certain feelings. And for me, the real big one was sadness, because I felt like, if I felt sad, that meant something was wrong with me. I felt like it just wasn't okay to be sad. And there are reasons why I came up with that belief, but which I don't need to get into, but that was a big one. So, you know, it was like I had done all this work on myself and like really gone back and evaluated all this stuff in my life. So there were all these things that took place that I could talk to you about them, you know, go into all kinds of detail. But for years and years, I felt like, you know, I'm not really getting to whatever the core issue is. I don't know what it is. And then it hit me a couple years ago, and it did, because I made a decision to work through that relationship with a therapist and face everything head on. It hit me that I knew about all the events. I was more than willing to talk about them, but what I didn't do is stand 1,000 feet above and look down and acknowledge how sad the whole picture was.
Yeah.
You know, and once I owned that, then I started to understand why, you know, I always kind of had this nagging sort of sadness that sort of baffled me why it was there, that would come up. Like I'd feel these waves of, I guess, depression that, you know, it wasn't always a dark cloud, but it would come up. And, and what I came to realize is, so when I say until I was willing to feel everything, what I mean is, okay, so I'm driving my car, going from appointment to appointment, and I get that wave, and I instead of avoiding it, tune into it. And when the magnitude is great enough, I mean, what I would do is say, okay, I'm going to compartmentalize this for now, and I'm going to go on with my life, but at the end of the day, or Friday or whatever day I had, I'm going to fucking go home and cry as long as I need to cry. I'm going to get in touch with it, and I'm going to let it out. And I just did that. I don't know, maybe over the course of a few years, maybe 10 times, just being willing to stop and do that. And what it usually amounted to was crying for 15 minutes or, you know, maybe not even that long, but being willing to invest the time.
I love that you said that, because to whoever is listening to this, and is fearful of, you know, and it, we call it doing the work. And I don't, I wish there was a different, maybe we could should say something like on the path or something like that, because it sounds like it's so hard, because a lot of people just won't complete the cycle is what I call it. It's closing the loop. It's completing the cycle. It's feeling the feelings. Most people don't want to get in their feels because they're afraid that they'll never stop feeling.
Right.
That if they allow the sadness to come, that the sadness will consume them or right. kill them.
Right.
And the truth is that there are ways and there are tools and there are, you know, where you can feel the feels and get them all out, and that's the goal, to get them up and out so that you're not just carrying it all around for the rest of your life in that backpack of, like, rocks.
Yeah.
And you're letting it go, but the only way out, it's like what I tell people about feelings when I speak to groups, like, feelings are like tunnels. The only way out is through.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us don't. We're scared we're going to get stuck in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Because we've just never allowed ourselves to go there.
Yeah.
So I love that you said, like, oh, you know, I'd sit, I'd emote for, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Well, you know, I'd always think, I'm just going to do this tonight. And I'd be prepared to invest the whole evening if that's what I, but it never ended up being like that. It ended up being a brief period of time, and then I felt better. And I move on, and then I just kind of was just like was good to myself, you know?
You know, the other thing I want to highlight here is that you weren't judging yourself for what you were feeling, right? So there's a thing called, well, there's emotions, and we know about those, but then there's meta-emotions. And meta-emotions are how we feel about how we feel. And so if I feel sad and I feel like it's wrong for me to feel sad, then it's going to take me even longer just to get through that sadness.
Right.
Because I'm resisting.
Yeah.
So check your meta emotion. Like, check, are you judging yourself for feeling depressed?
Mm-hmm.
Are you judging yourself for being angry after you were wronged? Like, just be with your feelings in a non-judgmental way. It is the most therapeutic thing. It's really quite amazing.
Well, this really is, it's unpeeling an onion. I mean, there's just layer after layer, and, you know, earlier layers were about not judging myself for feeling, you know, I mean, I had to work my way to, like, being able to not judge myself. But what you're talking about, I talk about all the time. I did a group yesterday with a group of young guys and talked about, so when you have a feeling like sadness, then you kind of feel stupid for feeling sad, or you feel bad, like you're not supposed to feel sad. Which of those is usually harder to get over? It's not the sadness. It's the judgment, and that's what's harder. And as I'm going through this process with this therapist, I went into her office one day and just like, oh my God, I said, feeling like going through these feelings is so exhausting. And she said, no, your resistance to it is exhausting. And that's true because, and she put it in what she talks about is, you know, allowing yourself to feel, not preventing yourself from feeling, and allowing yourself to go all the way through it until you get back to neutral. And that's what happens if we allow ourselves to do it. It never lasts as long as we fear it will last. And it's never as difficult as we think it's going to be if we just let it go.
It's never as bad as we think it would. That's the other thing. We just make things so dramatic in our head.
Mm-hmm.
You know? think we're going to die.
Yeah. Well, that's what it feels like. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, is just this indoctrination that, I mean, I think a lot, we just kind of think we're supposed to be happy all the time. And if we're not, there's something wrong with us. And that's just not reality.
No, that's unfortunate. It really is. It's just what we do, such a disservice. I mean, think about what we do to kids when they're little, right? And they're just having their fits. And we have so much to learn from children, you know? They just live life, man. They're just, and they can throw themselves on the floor and have an absolute, you know, fit or get all their feel right. You know, can I have a, can we go to the park? No. Oh, you know, and they freak out and they have their freak out and then they get up and they go, okay, you want to play now?
Right, right.
You know, and then we try to get them to stop.
Right.
Don't stop that. If you don't stop crying, like if you don't stop crying, I'm going to cry about. Like, I mean, just the things that, the things that I have said to my own kids, terrible. I just go to them and apologize. I'm so sorry. I just did the best, I knew at the time.
Yeah.
That was it. But all those things were said to me because nobody wants to deal with your emotions, right? The grown-ups, they don't want to see you cry. They don't want to see you feeling sad or whatever. It's like, don't feel. That's the message.
Well, you know why? It's because they don't want to feel.
Because they don't want to feel. That's what it is. Exactly right.
It's because your discomfort makes them uncomfortable. And so back to the partner thing, I mean, you know, one of the things that I've learned is like, if you're willing to be vulnerable with somebody, how they respond to that is pretty telling.
Yeah. Very telling.
Like, if they freak out or get mad or, you know, try to like turn it into you're blaming me or it's my fault or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the whole idea of where I end and you begin. I mean, if a person doesn't get that, I mean, you're spinning your wheels.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Probably biggest, hardest lesson I learned from my last relationship was just somebody said to me, like, what is the most important thing, you know, about a relationship? What I would probably say to you, I mean, besides the fact that you need to share the same core values, is conflict. How do you conflict? Or how does this person that you're trying to relate with, how do they conflict?
Yeah.
Because if somebody can't stay in their lane or work together for results, like I get it, everybody fights. I actually think there's healthy ways to fight in a relationship. If you're in a relationship, you don't fight with, you don't have disagreements or conflict come up. Like, I'm suspicious. Like, somebody's not being honest. But how you conflict is so important. And if you are with someone who cannot, will not, is incapable of taking responsibility for their part in the equation, you should run away.
Yeah.
That. Get in the car and drive away and don't go back. Because if someone is unwilling to take any responsibility, like that cannot be overcome. It cannot.
No, it can't. Yeah. And you know, it's sad sometimes, you know, because I've met some pretty great people who like, man, if I could have just convinced them how they should be, you know,
Wow. If you could just learn how to have an argument in a much healthier way, we would be great.
Right, right. Well, and that conflict, one of the things that I forget is that, I mean, a lot of times that's where some pretty exciting growth germinates.
Yes.
And, you know, like I was, I had a work scenario some time ago where I just kept running into resistance with this particular person. And ended up talking to like someone a little further up the chain about it. And then, you know, long story short, we all ended up like talking, and just some of the coolest shit ended up coming from us all coming to the table and being willing to have conversations and like everybody being heard. A lot of times that's what it amounts to, like dealing with interpersonal conflict is, you know, we don't need to like agree to the same, what we're going to do with all this. But if I know you heard me and you're not treating me like I'm a dumbass and I don't deserve to be heard, then, you know, then I can deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, I heard and I had a, I want to make a post about this. I just haven't finished writing it yet, but I heard recently, a definition for the word intimacy. It really resonated with me, and it goes, let me see if I don't mess it up. It's like, intimacy is being witnessed or being, having a loving witness. Oh shit. I'm gonna,
it's okay.
Being witnessed with kindness and compassion, being witnessed with kindness and compassion. Intimacy is, let me try it one more time. Intimacy is being witnessed with kindness and compassion. And I was like,
phew. Yeah.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. And then I thought, and then I went to, have I ever had that? Have I ever experienced that in the context of a romantic relationship? And I've in the early days of my last relationship, I would say that I had experienced that. And it was like, oh, wow, this is.
Didn't know that was possible.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, it's what that looks like to me is like when I'm come with my mess and I'm like, oh, here's all my feelings and I feel this and I feel that and I feel, and you know, my partner's not trying to fix it. My partner's not taking it personal. My partner's not getting defensive. My partner's just like, wow, yeah, I hear that.
Well, and all those things that you're talking about, like, well, not taking it personally, if you have any, like, that's just kind of a narcissistic response a lot of times. But, you know, as guys, like, I mean, I think we're kind of hardwired to just try to fix stuff. I mean, that's so, but having just like, just exercising some restraint. To just listen and something, if you communicate well enough, you know, maybe it looks like you saying to me, listen, I don't need you to do anything about this. Yep. I just need you to hear me.
You know? And the other thing I like to teach too, is just before you even come with your mess, you ask your partner, do you have space for this right now? I just have some stuff I need to say or unload or put out there, and you know, do you have space for that? Like, we just come at people these days, and it's like not knowing what their last phone call was, what their last interaction was, what kind of mood they're in. Are they hungry? Are they tired? Is it too late? Is it like we just get, oh, we got to unload right now? But I mean, what if we started to practice that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I try to do that with my friends. I don't always remember, but sometimes I'll call and be like, hey, I have something. I just need to vent out. Do you have room for that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do that too. And I don't know if I do it for that reason or not, but, I think I do it more like, listen, I need to talk about something so that they know, like, I want it to be on some level of priority. Like, this is important, you know? But yeah, I mean, if we don't tell people that, I mean, one of the big problems in relationships that comes about is we expect each other to be fucking mind readers, you know? Right?
What?
Yeah.
Tom, you can't read my mind? What? Why not?
Yeah.
You like, should just know.
You should if just I know
had,
what I want.
If I had a dollar for every person who I've heard say that about, they should just know. Well, no. I want to smack you in the back of the head. No, they shouldn't just know.
Right.
There's a thing going on in their brain than you do in yours.
Well, and that's part of the whole fantasy about relationships, the fairy tale relationship. You should just know. Like, if you were the right person for me, you would just know. Well, that's a crock of shit.
It is a crock of shit. Okay, guys, you heard it here. Tom and Jill both concerned that that is a big bologna sandwich.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
speak up for yourself. It's a good practice.
Absolutely. So, I think I know I found you on Instagram. It's funny that I end up coming across these people on Insta, and I'm never really sure how. I don't know if it's like a hashtag thing or or what it is, but I ended up finding you and starting to follow you, and you know, you have a really nice personality. You have a nice presence, and you know, you radiate joy, and I'm sure that helps your following quite a bit. And I'm sure the people who choose to enlist your support tend to be really glad they did. I bet that's the case.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I do. I love my life. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, and it's been hard won.
Yeah,
I do. You know, some people you feel like, easy for them to say. It's like, no, I mean, the carpet of my life was ripped out from under me. I was a stay at home mom whose husband ran off his mistress. And it was like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
There's no greater pain that I've ever experienced. Now, I imagine that death and think, but it was death to me.
Yeah.
It's what it felt like. And I was like, who am I? What am I doing here?
Yeah.
Will I even, all those things that you said when we started off, like, who even am I and how do I recover from this? And can I recover from this? And yeah, it's a lot, but I appreciate that. It's such a beautiful compliment. I truly love my life, and I have been through the dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe more than one. Several dark nights of my soul. But I can just tell you and tell anyone who's listening that no matter what predicament you find yourself in or what kind of pain you're in, what kind of loss you've suffered, what kind of pain you feel like you've inflicted on other people, like there's a way out. Mm-hmm. And you can have a life that you love. Like, I just, yeah. I mean, I'm the first one that will tell you if I'm feeling sad or depressed or whatever, I just know it's not permanent. They're just feelings. Mm-hmm.
Well, and here, and the silver lining to being willing to go through all the pain,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we think that if we repress a feeling, I'm going to ignore this sadness. You know, we're not really just ignoring our sadness. We're ignoring our emotions. So we're not just numbing ourselves from the bad ones. We're also numbing ourselves from the good ones. And
you don't get to pick. You're smushing it all down.
You don't. So then when you're willing to go through the sadness, then you also get to experience the joy in a way that you hadn't before. And all of a sudden, you're Coach Jilly on Instagram with this big, beautiful smile and this infectious sort of vibe that's attractive, that you become a person who, you weren't before. That's what happens. And it's a beautiful, yeah. beautiful thing, you know?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
So
I'm like, I feel like, you know, the hair club for men, like I'm not only a client, I'm a, however it goes.
Well, and that's,
yeah, I've done the work. I'm not going to ask anyone who comes to work with me to do something I haven't already done. And I think there's nothing more amazing than that, than hiring a coach or a therapist, a practitioner who can sit in front of you and say, like, I was there too. And this is how I came out the other side. And I feel like that's what you said earlier. You said that you had been to other therapists and then you finally found one. And the situation and went through it all with the therapist, but like that was obviously the one that was going to help you get through to the other side.
Well, and the other part of that is that before that, I didn't see anyone for a couple years, the therapist, and I trusted myself enough to wait until I found the right one. And when I found the right one, I knew.
Yeah.
She's the one who'll get it. She speaks my language. And and it was, I knew, but I had to get to the point in my life where I trusted myself enough to, and it, it was a process. It was. But man, I could just go on and on talking to you forever. So, but we probably ought to, bring this to a close at some point. So,
I know.
So, I mentioned this to you before that I would ask you about this. So I'm assuming, I guess I'd assume if there was a time in your life that you'd go back to say something to the younger Jilly that she needed to hear, would it be during your divorce or just prior to it? Or
it would probably be prior. Yeah, it would definitely be prior to it. It would be prior to, so there was a season there between when I found out that there was some unfaithfulness and when I actually chose to get divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great deal of struggle in there for me, you know, thinking I was going to do the right thing, right? You know, stay married for my kids, keep my marriage together. It was a good Christian thing to do. And, to my younger self, I would say, lean on your support. They can see things that you can't see. They love you. They can see your blind spots. Make sure they're safe people, like people who really will tell you the truth about what they see going on, but leaning on them, especially when you feel weak, because you're not always in my case, I wasn't always in the right state of mind. I would also say, stay open. Don't close your heart. Stay open to change. Stay open to growth. Stay open to healing in whatever way it comes to you. And trust yourself.
Hmm.
And if you don't trust yourself, then learn to trust yourself. Your body is always talking to you. There's always messages coming from your gut, from your intuition. You can trust yourself. There's a part of you that knows. That knows the right thing to do and the decisions to make. And, you know, and at first it might feel a little wobbly and a little creaky, but the more you practice, the better you'll get at it. So practice learning to trust yourself.
Yeah. And for me, you know, the clearing away all the yuck actually helps me discern those messages that I'm getting. Probably from my heart would be the, like, you know, and like the big one is, you'll hear from people that comes to mind is, well, you know, it's work, you know, it's not supposed to be, you know, work is work. It's not, well, really though, like, really, if you don't like it, I mean, isn't that like your soul trying to tell you something? Like maybe, maybe. And what I hope that part of what comes from this podcast, not just this episode, but in general, is that you don't have to sell yourself short and just have the job that it is. It is possible for you to have it all.
You can
make
the
money, you can be happy. And because I believe the more true to ourselves and what we want, the more true we are, the better we're going to be. The more it creates abundance, you know? So,
It creates health and wellness and wholeness and, you know, to be fully integrated, to be in integrity and alignment with yourself personally. You know, most people are stressed and sick and upset and their relationships are going sideways and all that because they're out of alignment, you know? They're not speaking what's true for them. They're not feeling their feelings. They're not trusting themselves. They're just, that's why I love this coronavirus isolation, stay at home stuff. This is just an invitation home. Come home to yourself.
So, all right. So one more thing, what's the future hold for Coach Jilly? Do you have any big plans? You going to write a book or anything like that?
So many big plans. Well, I actually have, am a collaborative author in a book that was set to be published in March, but they pushed back the publish date. And, so now it's kind of up in the air. It's called The One Thing That Changed Everything. So there's a book coming. I am available and open and ready to do more speaking engagements and workshops. I love that stuff. And I had some on the books for until we all went on lockdown. And I also do hypnotherapy. So I'm growing in that. I would love to get into more corporate hypnotherapy. But there again, we're talking about big groups of people. And right now, there aren't big groups of people gathering anywhere except online. Right. So,
well,
I think the rest of the year is going to be great.
Well, you got to keep me posted about the book. And maybe you could come back on when that is going to be released and kind of do another episode where you talk more about that, if you'd like to.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to have you back sometime. This has been great.
I would love to.
Yeah.
I would love to. Thank you, Tom, for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, I knew the first time I saw you that I wanted to talk to you, and I'm glad we did. So I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice. Thank you.
did great, honeybee.
The path to authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.